As a millennial, it's really common for you to want the financial security doing what you love. The problem is, you need to know where and how to find it. This can be frustrating, and it often makes you feel like a loser.
In Finding Mojo, we will help the millennials to get started in their journey to contented life by building the networks of life and at the same time benefiting the people around them. Welcome to Finding Mojo with Zana and Nico.
Welcome to Finding Mojo. I'm your host, Zana.
And I'm Nico. I'm the co-host of this podcast, Finding Mojo with Zana and Nico. This is actually brought to your friends from BSA Solutions Incorporated.
Thank you, Nico. Nico, who is our special guest today?
This is going to be a treat. So for those of you listening right now, we're going to introduce you to a relationship counselor. She is an emotionally focused therapist, and she's passionate about helping couples and individuals facing challenges in their relationships. So everyone, please, warm welcome to Ms. Azza Yasmin. Hi.
Hi, Azza. Hi, Nico. Hi, Zana. Hi. Great to be here.
I am
a claps in the background as well. Okay.
There you go. Yay.
Yay.
We love to have you on our episode this time, Azza. I am actually quite intrigued on how you actually land on this career and what motivates you.
How I became a relationship therapist.
Yes. Ah,
well, it started way back when. No, I'm just kidding. Where do I start? I grew up in two different countries, UK and Malaysia. I'm what is called a third culture kid, whereby I am the third culture because my passport country, I didn't live in my passport country, but I lived in a different country with different cultures, different food, different values, different language. And so I had to go in between these two cultures, making me the third culture kid. And you can Google that, third culture kids. And what was predominant in my life was how do I do relationships? Because it's very different in an Eastern culture and very different again in the Western cultures because the values are so different. How do I become me as a person and who am I? So I needed to know a relationship myself first. And in that journey, what happened was I started as a TV presenter thinking that, you know, this is a place that I can be accepted because I'm, you know, you have to be different when you're a TV presenter or when you are doing radio and all that. But it just didn't fill me up at all. I couldn't find myself at that point. My mother's also a counselor. So when I followed her, because I just became her unpaid assistant those times, or volunteer, sorry, mom. She did a lot of relationship and interpersonal skills, workshops, and that's where I learned about relationships. And then I got married. And then I'm like, I'm not good at this. And I got divorced within 2 years. And I was like, that question still lingered. How do you do relationships? What makes a good relationship? How can some of my cousins have long relationships way until, you know, they have their grandchildren and then some cousins don't? What is it? I don't get it. And nobody knows. If I ask these questions, nobody knows. There is, you know, each successful relationship have their own ingredients, which is different from the other person. But what is it? So then as I trained to be a counselor, I found that every problem that came into the counseling room was relationship based yet again. So this word relationship kept following me from childhood till now. And I trained as an emotionally focused therapist. An emotional focused therapist focuses on relationship. And then I got my answers. Then I was like, oh, this is how it's done. Right. Then I had to change myself and my relationship myself grew into myself. And then I had a better relationship afterwards. I knew who my friends were. I knew who what toxic relationships that I had to leave and make new friends. Boundaries. I knew my boundaries. A lot of people don't know their boundaries. Saying no and don't feel guilty about that or shamed. If you're shamed by it, how do you do that sort of relationship? So yeah, that's what motivates me until now. I can talk forever, but I'm going to shut up now. That's how I did it.
I think that is actually the, you know, like curiosity to actually find what is this all about. I think that Absolutely. Is actually the most important element in learning.
I'm constantly curious. I'm constantly asking questions. Mm. People don't like it, but hey, that's just me. And I found out that was me. Mm. But yes, people ask the same questions. Well, how do you do a relationship? But they aren't curious. They just go in ahead and then they make their own assumptions, decisions, label them in order to soothe themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a narcissist. They gaslighted me, da, 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 da. So these labels help to soothe yourself, but does it heal you? Mm. Does it help you learn for the next relationship that you're in? It kind of doesn't from where I'm standing, but to really understand really deeply about yourself and how you work, the process of relationship is where it lies. And also the emotions. Emotions are the motivation of how you respond to a relationship, and also emotions is the medicine to healing it as well.
So, you know, like if someone needs some counseling, what things actually happen in your counseling session? And how does that session help finding your way?
So in a couple counseling session with me, first of all, kudos to the couple for recognizing there is a problem and wanting to do something about it.
That was what I was going to say, because a lot of couples, they'd rather fix things themselves and don't go seek professional help. But biggest step there is to just even approach you. That's already a victory in itself.
Yes, absolutely. And that's the first thing we celebrate. They go like, but why? Some of them, but why? I said, no. This is a good thing. And also, if you're forced to come in by friends, family, relatives, I don't want you, because then your intention is not there to fix it. It's more of saving face and saving the honor of the family or whatever, that cultural stuff.
Compliance, maybe?
Compliance, absolutely. But you're not there, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so compliance, maybe, yes. Because if you're not there, the whole session would be for me to asking you, why don't you want to be here? I won't even touch there. That's what counseling is. I'll unpack that bit. And then from there, they come up with their own intention. Like, I think this is a good idea. I'll come back. But it's only come back if you want to. Don't come back because of somebody told you to. Get on board with it. Or if you want to come back to see how you want to get on board with it, then you can come with talk to me. So really, counseling, you can talk absolutely anything. And what happens in the session is when the couple comes in, they will come in with a lot of stories, depending on how long the relationship is and how long past relationships are. He did this, she did that. Do you remember when I did? And I've said sorry how many times to her? And she still bring this up? Because having a grin on his face right now. Do you relate to that?
There are a lot of scenarios, but it's more like things I see on TV series. That's it. But personal, absolutely. Not really.
Yeah. But those are true. Those are the things that I hear all the time in sessions. Mm. And so what for me is, this is what I call the stories or the data. And what I do is I take that data and I see the process of how you have your relationship. And so it's process over content. So you're coming in with a lot of content, with a lot of pain, with a lot of hurt. I'm sifting through that and I'm putting it in a process which has been thoroughly researched. And this process in EFT of emotionally focused therapy, they have found 4 different types of processes that couples get into that will get them stuck in a relationship that is very painful and hurtful. And this can go on for years or just after you get married. Doesn't matter. But once you get into that pattern of stuckness, it's hard to come out because you come in with your own patterns, that relationship patterns that you've heard or learned outside of you. And you come in with that and it doesn't work. But I love you. I love you so much. That's a foregone conclusion. But why are we fighting? You know, we're having conversations that are disconnecting us. I don't feel safe with you. Why are we having this? Whereas before we came in to the relationship, it was roses and butterflies and da, 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 da. And that's why I fall in love with you. And that's, you know, I chose to be with you, but now I'm here. Why are we fighting? Because I tell you why. Because when we met, it's about exploration. And the more we opened up and became vulnerable about ourselves, we allowed that person to have a safe place with us. And that safety allowed us to become a couple and then choose each other. But then when we past that tipping point where the safety is not there because we're having conversations that are very different than the first type, the first round of getting to know each other, you find that we get stuck in there, and then you start asking yourselves, are you there for me? Am I important to you? Can you call me? When I call you, will you come? When I hurt and I'm in pain, will you be there to hold me? Because you did it the last time, and how come you can't do it now? What happened to us, right? So the process changed. The more we get closer to each other, the more vulnerable we get with each other, the frightening the relationship can be. Mm-hmm. Because when I'm vulnerable and you're vulnerable, who's holding us? How do we hold each other? And when we can't hold each other in this space of the safe space of vulnerability, what happens? We get defensive. We get criticized. We blame, right? Mm. And so I'm saying these as a topic of process, but can you hear the blaming conversations that you have right now? Can you hear the criticism conversations that you have right now? And this is when it starts to get unsafe for the couple. They get stuck in this spiral of communication or process that just tears them apart. And if you can't do anything about it, or you can't repair, that's the word, you can't repair this, you divorce or not, or you find a girlfriend or find a boyfriend outside to meet that emotional safety. That's how you get affairs. You know, so for me, from my experience, and not from my training, but just from my experience, is that even for me, my relationships, the one thing that we were not taught, I guess, was how to have safe conversations and how to repair. Yeah. So these are the two things. How do we have safe conversations and how do we repair?
Okay, can I sneak in a question just real quick?
Go ahead, yeah.
Let's talk about the millennials. Let's talk about them working in different industries and everything. Mm-hmm. What is something that, say for example, you're in your mid-20s, you're about to enter a relationship for the first time. Let's admit it. Some of us are a little late to the party. Yeah, a little late to the party.
Yes.
So, or for someone who's just recently out of a relationship and then you want to come into a relationship right around this age, at 25, when you're in your 20s or, you know, about to hit the 30s, what's something that you should prepare yourself for, especially when you have that love versus career that you have to also consider? Because when you get to this age, I guess a lot of us would really want to jumpstart the career or hopefully become better at what we do. But at the same time, we also want to find love and hopefully settle down at some point, because that's what society dictates of us. And it is what has been told of us. Mm-hmm. What's something that millennials out there who are listening to this podcast should prepare for at this stage of their lives?
Right. Okay. So millennials, we're talking about people who may have just graduated or not, mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. that early mid-20s sort of age, right? Mm-hmm. This is what in counseling or in psychology, we call the storm and something portion of our lives.
The calm before the storm,
No, it's not calm before the storm. I'll find it. It's a stormy time. There we go. It's a stormy time, because we're trying to find ourselves. We're trying to land our feet on the ground and be part of society. Who are we in society? How can we be useful? I want to bring up my skills, but I also want a buddy next to me to, like, you know, cheer me on. Mm-hmm. But they also have their own thing to do. And do I have the time to cheer them on as I go along and find my own feet? And this is a very turbulent time, I guess. Which one do you do? Can you do both? Or I want both, but you've got to be doing it my way, not your way. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't matter whether it's a boy or a girl. It's that you have that sort of thing going on as well, right? Mm. So what I would say is, first of all, friendship, huge thing, huge thing. Because when we get close of a different level, when we get more vulnerable in an intimate relationship, it will change the way we have our cycle, our process. But when we know you as a friend, we see you vulnerable as a friend. We support you as a friend. And I find that as we grow old together, you're still friends. That's first.
So it's still basically just your foundation right there. Even if you're doing things romantic styles, the friendship has to still be there.
And it's
through the thick and thin of it.
Yeah, through the thick and thin of it. The friendship has to be there. Even when you're 80, 90, if you get there, your kids are gone, they're having their kids, they're probably their kids having more kids, you know, you're still friends. You got to be my best bud at the end of the day. Even if we have a child, you're still my best bud, but you're my best bud looking after the child with me, right? And you're my best bud helping me making career choices at the end of the day. And also, if you Google Gottman, that's another research relationship guru. They advise couples of whatever age to do what we call a love map. Mm-hmm. So a love map is something that you, there are questions for the love map. You can Google it and you can find the questions. And basically you sit down, you know, have a really deep conversation of where you want to go career-wise. What are your dreams for family? You know, just lay it down on the table. Because my dream and your dream of a family is different, right? So I want to hear yours and I want to hear mine. So, but then now we're together. How can we take yours and mine and make it one? Okay, so those are the kind of conversations people don't have because it's so vulnerable. And being vulnerable is just opening yourself up to anything. It can be either shot down or loved. And that's scary in itself. So if you're a friend and, you know, going out exclusively, perhaps just having a friend, put that down or not. Even if you're in all this company, I've had conversations with friends where we sit down after class, after university, sit down the class and just speak about, I want so many kids. I want to have this sort of career. I want my husband to be like this or my wife to be like this. And we listen to our friends at that time when it's not as vulnerable. And we're not together. We know what your dreams and wants are. So when you come into relationship eyes wide open, then you help each other achieve those relationships. You know, so the love map is very important. So stay friends, talk about the love map. And also remember, I was just thinking about a friend of ours, a family friend. They took turns in their family. So they were very academic. So they were going like, okay, you do your PhD first, I'll look after the family. So that was 5 years. It says, okay, now you're graduated, I'll look after the family, and I've got the PhD, I will send whoever back and forth, I will be the taxi driver for all the kids, you do your PhD. So you take it in turns, and you get your dreams. So both now are PhD students. Oh, sorry, they're doctors now. So take it in turns. You can have your dreams, but you need to talk about them. I think is that helpful?
Yes, very much, very helpful. I think it's all about communication, which we don't learn communication when we are in school, you know, in primary schools, you know, we learn, they teach us how to present our ideas up at the front, but it's more of training to be a speaker, but not training to be a listener, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, how do you do this speaker-listener thing in a relationship?
How do you have different conversations in a relationship?
Yes, yes.
That is not very presenting, like, my dear, this is how we are going to do our relationship right now. So you're not presenting. So you're not presenting, right? It's more like, honey, how do we do this together?
Hmm.
Yeah, like, honey, how do you know? Hmm. And creating that safe relationship. Yes, we can do the speaker's listener skills. It is something that is done by PrEP, P-R-E-P, PrEP Marriage. And they train people or couples to do the speaker listener skills. And so what happens is let's talk before speaker listener skills. When you're in a relationship and you're communicating and you don't have the skill, don't have to, you know, you can't be vulnerable, what happens to your emotions? What's happening when you get into a really bad cycle? You get fearful, you get angry, you get frustrated, you get annoyed, you get dismissed, you get discouraged, you know, with all these conversations, because they're not listening to me. And then when not listening to me, I don't feel safe in this relationship anymore. And then when I'm trying to connect to you, because I don't feel safe, because at once we were so safe and we were so good together. It is so hard to connect to you right now. And the more I get disconnected from you, the more I get angry, the more I raise my voice, the more my sentences get so fast, because I think if it's fast enough, it will pierce you. And if it will pierce you, you can listen to me and I'm here and I'm relevant. But then you're having an episode too and you're getting angry, you're raising your voice, your words are getting faster. We get 0 to 100 miles per hour in seconds, right? And it's so frequent that I'm thinking, this is not a good relationship for me. And the more you don't hear each other verbally or in, I've done your laundry for you or whatever, it starts to get physical. Sometimes it starts to get physical, right? If I can't do it with words, if I can't do it with action, nothing's landing on you. You're still not listening to me. Sometimes it does get there, like, are you listening to me? You know, you'll shake sort of thing, because you're at that level of frustration. Some couples do go there, but some couples just shut down. You know, I've had enough. I don't want to go there with you. I love you too much. I don't want to get into this 1 to 100 thing argument with you. I can just see it's hurting us. It's hurting me. It's hurting you. I just don't want to. So some couples do shut down and they don't discuss anything. And then all of a sudden they present to people like, oh, they're such a good couple together. And then all of a sudden like, huh? The divorce? Huh? They've got somebody else? Huh? So they're not feeling safe because they're not having a conversation that is safe, that's creating safety, that's creating connectivity, that is a space where you can be heard, be vulnerable, come as yourself and still be accepted. They're not having that sort of relationship, right? Because we don't know how. We don't know how to, but we love each other so much. So we add each other's faces and we're always all the time. So what the speaker listener skills do, or the speaker listeners techniques do, is they help couples have a different conversation that was more connecting, more vulnerable. I'm heard. I'm important. And you don't go from 1 to 100 in a span of seconds. So speaker listener skills is something that we can do quite easily together if you guys want to do it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Why not? Let's do it.
Hey. Yeah? Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Can I make you a couple? Can I make you a husband and wife? Just sure, for this relationship, sure. Guys.
Yeah, but I'm still the boss.
Yeah. She's the boss. So yeah. Boss,
okay. Okay. Pick a topic. Pick a topic that you want to argue about. Let's do that first.
Okay, for the sake of connecting everything to finding mojo, let's say I am in a bit of a rut. Mm-hmm. And maybe Zana is trying to motivate me to hopefully get over the hump. Mm-hmm. Something like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Maybe something related to work.
Mm. Okay. Perfect. And let's put some background in it. So let's say you guys have been together for 10 years. You don't have kids. You've been working for 20 years, for example. Mm-hmm. And so that explains the rut. Mm. And so you're coming into the relationship very, very down, very dumb. Mm. And it's affecting the relationship. So how do you think that would sound like? Action.
Okay. Zana, I need you to possibly give me advice on this. The fact that I'm actually asking this from you is really hard for me. I've been wanting to get this position. I've been wanting to become manager at the company, but there are issues within the framework of the job that's not giving me that opportunity to actually be there. I've been denied this position, 3 times already? Should I just go elsewhere? Should I stay? What else should I do? Because I believe that I've already done everything I could to become, the manager that everyone should look up to, but I was never given the chance. I mean, I've been denied 3 times. What should I do?
Do you really like to work there? I don't really like your friends there. Do you like it there?
Well, I like it there. The fact that I've been wanting this position, I'm still wanting to get that position. I mean, what's the matter with my friends? I mean, I think they're fine.
Well, they only like to have fun, but they're not really serious or not ambitious person, you know? Like, I'm not sure whether they are good people that you have to be around with. Maybe that's the reason why you didn't get the promotion, because you were surrounded by people who are not inspiring.
I see what you're getting there. Yeah, but the thing is, I was hoping that if I get the position, I could inspire them to actually do better with their lives. And hopefully that energy that I will provide as, say if I get the position, you know, it will inspire them to become better and hopefully get other position. I could be like a beam of light.
Okay, well, if you get to be the manager, right, it's uh-huh. you have, of course, more work scope. You got more things to do. You, even now at your position, you are coming home late every day. Do you think like being a manager would actually, like, we're going to have less time to spend together?
I'm hoping against hope that by the time I get to become manager, I can delegate other stuff. So it frees me up and we'll have more time. Haven't you thought about that? Come on. I got to be the boss this time. So I can tell them, hey, you do this and do that. See?
Well,
doesn't that work?
I don't think so. It's like when you become a manager, you have more responsibility. There's no way they're going to like put you become a manager and you have less work. It will be more work. Yes, you can delegate. Delegation is you actually delegate the simpler things, but you actually going to do a much more complex work. So I know you are so committed with your work now, and I know how frustrating it is for you not to get to be promoted. But I'm just worried about our relationship, about how much time we could actually have together if you get to the manager. And of course, I don't mind that if it's you get double the salary. Have you ever talked about to your boss about what's the salary look like if you become a manager?
That's... Wow. Okay. I'm just going to pause you guys right there. Okay. Well done.
Wow. Wow. That sounded like a radio drama. Okay.
Oh, he's like wiping his, Nico's like wiping his brow. Like,
I know.
That was, Okay, let me ask you guys, you know, how did you feel in that conversation? What was happening?
What does Azza think about Zana and Nico's speaker-listener skills exercise? Did our two hosts pass with flying colors? Or are they in for more challenges? Find out on the next episode.
This has been Finding Mojo with Zana and Nico, where we help millennials get started in their journey to contented life by building the networks of life and at the same time, benefiting the people around them.